This is Tuesday, May 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the investigation continues into what is being called a terrorist attack in Manchester, England.
This was among the worst terrorist incidents we have ever experienced in the United Kingdom.
We will take you to Manchester for the latest on that. Also ahead, we check in with VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson, who's covering the testimony of U.S. intelligence officials before a House committee. And the U.S. president says Israeli and Palestinian leaders are ready for peace. All on today's International Edition. The so-called Islamic State terrorist group is claiming responsibility for Monday's blast at a concert by U.S. pop star Ariana Grande in Manchester, England, one that killed at least 22 people and injured dozens more. The group said a soldier of the caliphate was responsible for the attack on the people IS described as crusaders. Many of those killed and injured in the blast were children and teenagers. The top U.S. intelligence official, though, said it is not yet clear whether the Islamic State group was behind the attack. The director of national intelligence, Dan Coats, told Congress the extremist group frequently claims responsibility for terror attacks. British Prime Minister Theresa May said police and security officials believe they do know the identity of the attacker. And she left no doubt about what she felt about the attack.
We struggle to comprehend the warped and twisted mind that sees a room packed with young children not as a scene to cherish, but as an opportunity for carnage. But we can continue to resolve to thwart such attacks in future, to take on and defeat the ideology that often fuels this violence, and if there turn out to be others responsible for this attack, to seek them out and bring them to justice.
In the midst of his visit to the Middle East, President Donald Trump spoke of the attack.
Our society can have no tolerance for this continuation of bloodshed. We cannot stand a moment longer for the slaughter of innocent people. And in today's attack, it was mostly innocent children. The terrorists and extremists and those who give them aid and comfort must be driven out from our society forever. This wicked ideology must be obliterated, and I mean completely obliterated, and the innocent life must be protected. All innocent lives. Life must be protected.
Henry Ridgwell is in Manchester. He joins us now. Henry, what's the latest in the investigation into the blast last night?
Well, in the past hour, the police have actually named the suspect in last night's suicide attack. He is Salman Abedi, believed to be a 22-year-old man from Manchester, but of Libyan origin. We don't know any further details, but police have given us that name in the past hour. They've been carrying out their forensic checks across the venue over the course of the day. We've been kept about 500 metres away from Manchester Arena, where last night around 21,000 people, most of them teenagers and children, attended the concert by Ariana Grande. Tragically, 22 killed. We've had some of the names of the victims today, the youngest of them, a girl just 8 years old. So a tragic day here in Manchester. More details of the investigation coming through. The police say that their next step is to determine if this suspect, Salman Abedi, works alone or if he was part of a terror cell, if perhaps he wasn't the one who made the bomb, who had that know-how and technology, and if there is a danger that further attacks could take place. We don't know the result of those investigations yet. Further arrests have been made in Manchester throughout the day. We're expecting further updates in the coming days.
The Prime Minister, as you know, said earlier today that the threat level throughout Great Britain is at a very high level. What do you see around Manchester as far as evidence of that?
A very raised level of police. Normally, British police are not armed on the streets, although increasingly with the number of terror attacks that are taking place in Britain and across Europe, we do see more armed police on the streets. Today, there are armed police on virtually every street corner in the centre of the city. and many people being stopped and questioned, having bags searched, and so on. But it's not an aspect of life that's normal in Britain, and particularly in Manchester. Most of the terror attacks in recent years have been focused on the capital, London. So there is a level of shock both among the police here in having to deal with this. They've drafted in armed police from across the country to deal with this situation, but also among the population of the city who woke up in shock to the news this morning and who are trying to process the images and the tragedy that's unfolding in front of their eyes.
Henry Ridgewell is in Manchester, England for VOA. Thanks so much, Henry.
Good to be with you.
All right, we continue now and to see what is being said around the world on social media about this and maybe some other stories. Andrew Palczewski joins us. What are you hearing?
Well, it's an unfortunate pattern that we see with these terrorist attacks that's almost become formulaic on social media, the different steps and kind of phases that we go through. So it starts with the information first spreading. We saw those videos go out from inside the concert hall as the audience was fleeing after the bomb went off. Then you see authorities coming out and using social media to try to convey information, and Facebook activating its safety check feature, which allows people to check in and say, yes, I'm safe. No, I wasn't injured. Then you see people opening their doors to strangers, acts of kindness, trying to help people to find their loved ones who are missing, in many cases, thankfully, finding them. But then, as Henry Ridgewell reported, you start to get the names of the victims, the names of the perpetrators of these
attacks. An eight-year-old
that was killed. So it's tragic and it's unfortunate in these cases that it's been distilled down to just this kind of step-by-step. But this is the pattern that we often see on social media as these terrorist attacks play out.
It is interesting and it is heartening that in almost all of these attacks, the reaction of the community is, as you have described, that's what's being said on social media. Taxi drivers all over the city were giving free rides to people trying to get out of the way. Hotels that gave free rooms to people, especially kids and other people who had been separated.
Right, and this was a concert that was, you know, Ariana Grande is an artist very popular with young people. A lot of young people may have been there and waiting for their parents to pick them up, so maybe couldn't get with their parents. And there was one instance I saw on social media of a hotel not far from the site where there were about 50 children that they had kind of rounded up until they could get their parents and try to find them to try to keep them safe. But even outside of the city of Manchester, you see around the world this hashtag Pray for Manchester. It seems like anytime there's a terrorist attack, it's hashtag Pray for whatever city it is. It's part of this formulaic nature. But we're seeing people express condolences around the world, and especially the venue being outside of a concert. Ariana Grande has fans around the world. But as someone said on social media, this could have been a Taylor Swift concert. It could have been a Justin Bieber concert. It could have been a any other artist. So I think fans around the world, not just of Ariana Grande, but concert goers are really moved by this, knowing that it could have been really any concert anywhere in the world where this could have happened.
How do people get in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter at APAL, APAL.
And please do that. That is Andrew Palczewski here with us on International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, the Islamic State terrorist group is claiming responsibility for Monday's blast at a concert by U.S. pop star Ariana Grande in Manchester, England. At least 22 killed, dozens more injured. U.S. President Donald Trump has declared that both the Israeli and Palestinian leaders are ready to reach for peace. At a congressional hearing, the U.S. National Intelligence Director declines to comment about a controversial report about possible communication between him and the president. The latest U.S. budget proposal from the White House would slash many social programs, including those that help the poor pay for food and medical care. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A star being consumed by a black hole may be quite common, but news of stars being formed by a black hole could be something to notice. A UK-led group of scientists recently made what they say are the first confirmed observations of stars forming inside blasts of material that pour out from supermassive black holes located at the center of galaxies. As a black hole devours a star or other cosmic object, it can only handle so much of the material at one time. The remaining matter is heated and blown out from the abyss with powerful and dense winds. The ejected matter then gathers around the black hole and forms a ring of material known as an accretion disk before being pulled in by the tremendous gravity of the black hole. The scientists made their discovery as they observed the collision of two galaxies located some 600 million light-years from Earth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. U.S. media reports say President Trump asked two of the country's top intelligence chiefs to publicly disavow possible Russian collusion with his election campaign. However, the officials considered that request to be inappropriate and refused. The Washington Post reports Trump made separate appeals in March to Dan Coats, the National Intelligence Director, and to Admiral Mike Rogers, the Director of the National Security Agency, urging them to rebut claims that Russia coordinated its effort with Trump campaign aides to help Trump win the White House. Coats has been testifying before a congressional hearing today. It's being covered by VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson, and she joins us now. Catherine, has Coats said anything about these reports?
He's been extremely careful, Ira. He is certainly taking the, you know, expected line that he is not going to be addressing those reports. And over here on the House side, where we're also having a congressional hearing on the Russia probe, we are hearing from former CIA Director Brennan, who said that if a U.S. president had ever asked him a similar request, he would have certainly said no.
Well, what about reports of Russian intervention in the U.S. election? I believe they are talking about that. Is that correct?
Oh, that is certainly right. We can't seem to escape that story up here on Capitol Hill, and today is certainly no different. We had the House Intelligence Committee, which has certainly been embattled over the past few months and weeks, as, you know, their chairman had to step down after he went over to the White House to inform President Trump that he felt he had unearthed some new information in the Russia probe. So that slowed down the House committee investigation over here, but they are back and working again and talking to former CIA Director Brennan, who certainly had some very interesting things to say about the possible contacts between Russia and Trump campaign operatives.
Such as?
Well, Brennan came out and said that he was aware of intelligence that revealed contacts and interactions between those Russian officials and U.S. persons involved in the Trump campaign. That was certainly the headline coming out of the hearing today. And, you know, later he went on and said something very interesting that may apply to some individuals who are currently being called before these committee investigations. He said that some individuals don't realize that they're on a treasonous path until it's too late. So certainly some interesting comments here on Capitol Hill today in terms of that Russia probe.
Well, politically, we should let people know that Brennan is not part of the Trump administration, right?
That is very right. He is a former administration official. He was part of the Obama administration and left in January.
Well, so where does it go from here? Who else might be called? How do you think this will be assessed? And how do you think it will be applied to ongoing investigations?
Well, up here on Capitol Hill, from a congressional point of view, there's concern that the appointment of Special Counsel Robert Mueller, who is the former FBI director, to head a wide-ranging investigation into Trump campaign contacts with Russia will somewhat sideline some of these congressional investigations that are still ongoing. We have multiple investigations that are going on up here on the Hill, and the members of Congress I've spoken to are making the argument that these investigations still need to go on because they look at some of the bigger questions about foreign countries interfering in our democratic process, our elections, and that these issues need to be addressed. So it'll be certainly interesting to see how those two tracks of investigations run alongside each other and whether they're able to cooperate.
And so far, nothing from the White House that you hear of anyway, right?
Nothing that I've heard yet.
Catherine Gibson is the VOA congressional correspondent, one of them, and we thank her so much for being with us. Catherine, thanks again.
Always good to talk to you.
Well, the U.S. president continues on his first overseas trip since taking office. Donald Trump today declared that both the Israeli and Palestinian leaders are ready to reach for peace. He made the remark alongside Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in a speech at the Israel Museum, Yad Vashem. Trump had held talks with Netanyahu Monday and met him again on Tuesday after a brief visit to the West Bank for a one-hour discussion with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas.
As I have repeatedly said, I'm personally committed to helping Israelis and Palestinians achieve a peace agreement. And I had a meeting this morning with President Abbas and can tell you that the Palestinians are ready to reach for peace. I know you've heard it before. I am telling you, that's what I do.
The U.S. president arrived in Israel Monday after a two-day visit to Saudi Arabia, where Trump said King Salman assured him Riyadh does want peace between Israelis and Palestinians. In public remarks yesterday, Netanyahu warned that it will not be simple, but also expressed cautious optimism that for the first time in many years and the first time in my lifetime, I see a real hope for change. Trump Wednesday is going to meet with Pope Francis at the Vatican, underscoring the emphasis during his first foreign trip on the three faiths involved. Trump has now landed in Rome. Before leaving Italy, he will meet with the Italian president and prime minister prior to a Thursday flight to Brussels in Belgium. The American leader will make remarks at the new headquarters of NATO amid concern among alliance members about Trump's commitment to that organization. And on Friday and Saturday, the president is back in Italy, specifically on the island of Sicily, for the Group of Seven summit. Stay with us on VOA for full coverage. This is VOA.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
VOA Special English, a way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com for 50 years helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
We continue on International Edition. We have lost James Bond, at least one of them. The British actor Roger Moore, best known for his movie role as James Bond, has died at the age of 89. His children said in a statement today, "It's with a heavy heart that we must announce our loving father, Sir Roger Moore, has passed away in Switzerland after a short but brave battle with cancer." They said the love with which he was surrounded in his final days was so great it cannot be quantified in words alone. A private funeral will be held in Monaco according to his wishes, they added. Moore gained international fame for playing famous secret agent James Bond in seven films released between 1973 and 1985, including Live and Let Die and The Spy Who Loved Me. They were based on the books by Ian Fleming. Moore was also one of the longest-serving goodwill ambassadors for the United Nations Children's Fund, visiting projects for children in over 16 countries. He was awarded UNICEF UK's first Lifetime Achievement Award in 2012, which was later named the Roger Moore Lifetime Achievement Award. The executive director of UNICEF, Anthony Lake, said that with the passing of Sir Roger Moore, the world has lost one of its great champions for children, and the entire UNICEF family has lost a great friend. Also, we are now hearing that Dina Merrill, the rebellious heiress who had defied her super rich parents to become a movie star, often portraying stylish wives or the other woman, has died at the age of 93. Merrill, raised in part on the Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida, now owned by President Trump, died Monday, according to a family spokeswoman. The cause of death and other details were not immediately available on Tuesday. Starting in the 50s, Merrill appeared appeared in more than 100 films and television programs, her break coming after Katharine Hepburn recommended her for the 1957 Tracy Hepburn comedy, The Desk Set. Well, a tattoo artist in California has created what many of us can't even imagine, a tattoo that also produces sound. Artist Nate Sigard inks audio sound waves into the skin that makes it possible to hear music or someone's voice by using a smartphone app. VOA's Deborah Block explains how it does it.
Not only is this woman's dog howling, but so is the waveform tattoo that she is listening to on her smartphone. Tattoo artist Nate Sigard calls his audible body art sound wave tattoo.
Actually, what we're doing with a sound wave tattoo is we're using image recognition inside of the app to notice when it's looking at the tattoo, and then it plays the sound of the tattoo back on top of itself.
Up to a minute of sound can be recorded and uploaded to the smartphone app, which generates a waveform that can be inked on a tattoo. Once the tattoo is finished, a photo of it is uploaded to the app and matched to the audio file. When someone points at the tattoo, the audio file plays.
I love you.
Sigard's friend Josh Gallner wanted a sound wave tattoo in memory of his father who died from cancer. Here, his dad's voice leaves a message to others who have the disease.
You absolutely have to believe. And once you have that belief and that desire, you can conquer anything.
Sigard wants to establish a network of trained sound wave tattoo artists all over the world, so people can not only see their tattoo, but listen to it too. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
This could make the plot of a great movie. Just think about it. You've been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook at VOA Now. Our director, Patrice Martin, thanks to you, along with engineer John Dryden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On May 17th, Acting Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs Stuart Jones said the U.S. is determined to hold Iran accountable for its human rights abuses with new actions. He pointed to the newly released report to Congress detailing U.S. sanctions imposed in connection with human rights abuses in Iran. The report includes the sanctions announced last month against the Tehran Prisons Organizations and its former head, Sohrab Soleimani. The United States urges our partners around the world to join us in calling out individuals and entities involved in Iran's human rights abuses. Acting Assistant Secretary Jones said, whether it's imprisoning people arbitrarily, inflicting physical abuse and torture, or executing juvenile offenders, the Iranian regime has for decades committed egregious human rights violations against its own people and foreign nationals, and this pattern of behavior must come to an end. In addition to Iran's human rights violations, the U.S. remains concerned about Iran's ballistic missile development, which is in defiance of U.N. Security Council Resolution 2231. On May 17th, the Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control designated 7 targets connected with Iran's ballistic missile program, including 2 senior Iranian defense officials, Morteza Farasatpour and Rahim Ahmadi, an Iranian company, and members of a China-based network. In a statement, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said, "This administration is committed to countering Iran's destabilizing behavior, such as Iran's development of ballistic missiles and support to the Assad regime. The United States," he noted, "will remain vigilant when it comes to Iran." Acting Assistant Secretary of State Jones also said, in addition to the actions taken today, we are communicating to the U.S. Congress that the United States continues to waive sanctions as required to continue implementing the U.S. sanctions lifting commitments in the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. He noted this does not diminish the United States' resolve to continue countering Iran's destabilizing activity in the region, whether it be supporting the Assad regime, backing terrorist organizations like Hezbollah, or supporting violent militias that undermine governments in Iraq and Yemen. And above all, the United States will never allow the regime in Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.